Right, we're nearly at the end of Easter. Easter, as we saw on our slide at the start, is a seven-week period. And if Lent is training in penitence, Easter is training in the joy of being a resurrection community. It's a time of internal spiritual formation for followers of Jesus in the light of the resurrection. And so today we're coming to the end of that seven-week period, and we're getting ready next week for Pentecost, when the Spirit comes on the disciples and sends them out into the world. And in the meantime, Jesus has just left us, because the ascension was on Thursday. And so the disciples are now sitting around wondering what they do without the man in the white coat to tell them. This is the point where they need to take their autonomy and work out what they are to do. So let's look at maybe summarizing. What does it mean for us to be set up to do this? What does it mean to be a trained disciple ready for deployment? Making it clear, by the way, that that deployment comes in many, many different forms. We're not necessarily talking about a particular kind of public ministry, because most Christians do not have that in the same way. Our life in the world as Christians comes in all sorts of different forms. And yet, if we are really disciples of the resurrected Christ, there is something qualitative there for all of us, which is a bit challenging, but which is also reassuring. And we need to work out maybe what that means, how we cope with that difference. And so our first reading today, well, chronologically in the scriptures, Psalm 1, is a wonderful place to return to. This is the psalm which sits at the start of the spiritual training manual of the Jewish people, the Psalms. The Psalms govern their life of worship. The Psalms are a school of prayer. The Psalms teach us how to praise God and worship God. They teach us how to complain to God. They teach us how to lament. They teach us all sorts of things. They also teach us how to deal with powerful emotions, because the Psalms are some of the most emotional documents you'll ever read. There's all human life there. But at the end of the Psalms, there's a hymn of unequivocal praise, Psalm 150, and at the first Psalm, there's a kind of manual for the whole thing. How do we learn to do this stuff? What does it mean to be a follower of the Lord? And the image chosen is the image of a tree. A healthy tree. So what makes this tree healthy? It's planted in the right place. The tree, which is the image of those of us who are in a right relationship with God and the world, is a tree which is planted near a water source. It's planted in soil, in an environment, which is the right place for it to be. It's been interesting looking around in Australia at the silver birch trees, for example. And a few people who know about Australian conditions have said to me that actually silver birches aren't really designed to grow in Australia, and they tend to die rather a lot, because they're not really the right tree for most Australian conditions. Immigrant palms turned up, thought silver birches would be nice, discovered that they actually are a bit marginal in this climate. But the silver birches down by Lake Burley Griffin are magnificent, because they are planted by enough reliable water to survive. So there's a question of what the tree needs and a question of the ecosystem, isn't there? But there's a situation. What are the conditions? And then what do these conditions provide to the tree? If the tree is in the right place, it will be nourished and sustained sustainably over time. Through the nourishment, through the sustenance, what happens to the tree? The tree grows. It doesn't stay the same size. It is in the nature of a tree to grow, because in growing it expresses its life. It will always be changing. It will be going through cycles. The conditions enable the life and growth of the tree and its change over time. Last week I saw a garden planted 30 years ago. It made me realize that actually, in my reasonably short life so far, I've lived long enough that if I had planted a tree myself in 1992, it might now be as enormous as those trees in that garden. Because my life has been a very mobile one, I've never lived anywhere as long as I have in that rectory. So I've never lived anywhere long enough to see a tree grow, because I've kept moving. But for those of you who know about stability in place, you will not be surprised to know that trees don't stay the same size, they change, they get bigger. And they're supposed to, and so are we. And then what happens to these trees? They bear fruit. The nourishment is so abundant, and the life of the tree naturally tends towards creating a form of life which is for the benefit of others. Trees bear fruit for the benefit of others. They are designed to reproduce so that the life they have is given, passed on, for the flourishing of future trees, descendants, and also for the flourishing of those creatures in the ecosystem which depend on the contribution of that tree for a wider flourishing and for reproduction. So for us as Christian people, this is what we need, and this is what it means for us to be flourishing as people of God. We need to be in the right place. We need the right context around us. And for most of Christian history, the wisdom about that has been that that means belonging to a local church community. That is our compost bin. That is our raised bed. We need to be in the right place. We need to be nourished and sustained. So we need to be fed in the ways that will sustain us and make us live as Christians. If our Christian life is too dry, we will wither. It can also be swamped as well. And then what does it mean? It means that we are growing and changing. The way we relate to God, to each other, our understanding of ourselves, it is natural and healthy and in fact necessary for us to become different people. Because that is a sign that we are actually living this life. We will change. In some places we will grow weaker, in other places we will grow stronger. There is that continuity over time. But there's that difference as well, and there are seasons. And some things we can do really well when we're very small, and other things we can't do until we're very big. And God is patient and gracious with us, but we will be growing and changing. And then we will be reproducing as well. As Christians, we will be so nourished by the life of God that we will have the resources of life to give our life to others. We will reproduce as Christians. We will bless others. Our life will overspill in ways sometimes we can predict. We will have maybe descendants, and also in ways we can't predict, when the birds of the air come and take our fruit and do something completely different with it. But there's an abundance of life. Picking the apple off the tree does not harm the tree. The test of a healthy tree is that it has enough life to produce and reproduce while continuing to grow and be healthy. Equally, sometimes trees which have too much fruit can break. There's always a balance to be struck. So this image of a tree is a really good one for us, but there is a huge difference between us and vegetables. And the difference is simply this: vegetables don't have agency. They are completely passive in that sense. They don't choose where they are, but we do. So the difference between us and a vegetable is that we can choose to make our conditions better, and we can also choose to mess them up. And therefore, we have a responsibility ourselves for some of what we do as Christians. Our job is to be in the right place. Our job is to choose nourishment. Choose to be nourished. Our job is to be intentional about how we grow. To grow spiritually and to be aware that that involves us changing. And our job is to bear fruit intentionally again for the good of others. And so there's a pretty good criteria to assess how we are going as individuals and as a community. Are we in the right place for where God wants us? Are we being nourished enough? Are we growing individually and as a community in a healthy way? How are we changing? And are we growing out? Are we blessing other people? So we've got some responsibility for that. But of course, not all the responsibility, because most of this is actually God's fault. God made us, God chose us, God called us. We might choose to follow, but God actually bears the primary responsibility here. So what does that mean? Because if we move on to our gospel, but even just thinking about it in general, we know life is a risky business, and being a Christian is a risky business. It involves taking commitments, making choices, which expose us in different ways. John uses the word world in lots of different ways in his gospel, but one of the ways he uses that word is to talk about the contrast between the life of God and then those bits of creation which are not illuminated yet by that life. Maybe indifferent to it or even hostile. And Jesus says very clearly, his disciples are not being taken out of that world, they are in it. Sometimes it's hostile, sometimes it's indifferent, sometimes it's curious. But God has put us in that mess, if you like, because the world is a mess. So it's reassuring to know that alongside the things we have to do, Jesus is praying for us to the Father right now, just as he did with his disciples the day before he died. So what does Jesus ask his Father to do? What is God's job? Well, three things in this passage. Jesus asks the Father to do three things for the disciples. And Jesus right now in heaven is on his knees praying to his Father for God to do those same three things for us. What are they? The first thing is, Father, make them one. Jesus, the gardener, knows that a healthy ecosystem in the garden requires gardening done by someone who is not a plant. Jesus knows that we cannot do this all for ourselves. So Jesus is praying to the Father that in all the diversity and complexity of our lives, individually, because we are not united with ourselves, and among ourselves, we have the issue of sin. We have the issue of misunderstandings, our human limits. We cannot sort those things out. So the form of salvation, if you like, that Jesus is praying for us, is that God, by God's intervention, will give us the unity which we cannot achieve for ourselves. That's God's job. Of course, we can collaborate with that. But just as Jesus is praying to the Father for that, in fact, the unity of a complex group of humans is so much God's work that arguably the most practical thing we can do is to take that to God, which is why, as you know, this week of prayer for Christian unity is such an important time. We need to ask God for that gift, and Jesus is asking for it, and God is promising to give it. That's God's job. And then what's the second thing Jesus asks? Protect them from the evil one. Because we all experience in this world forces of evil in different ways, outside us, which come to us in forms that attack us, that drag us down. Now, I'm not going to get into what they are, because there are lots of ways of talking about that. That would require a lecture, and I'm already at 14 minutes, for which I note. So I'm going to stop at 16 on the dot, okay? But God is going to protect us. God knows we need it. And then what the final thing God is going to do for us is to make us holy in the truth. Sanctify us. And what does that mean? It actually means God is going to set us apart and equip us to be an infectious, godly presence in the world. Holiness is being filled with the glory and light of God, to such an extent that through us, God's life and truth is transparent and visible to those around us. And that is God's job, not ours. All we need to do is to be open to God working through us. And so what does that make us? What kind of group of trees should we be? Well, the best image I can think of, actually, of the healthy ecosystem that results from this is the community garden. Either slightly walled, like the one in Dixon, with allotments, or more interestingly, like the one in Lynham, which is this wonderful, open, ordered, complex, messy, beautiful space with fruit trees, with shade, with space for the scavengers, for the birds of the air. A place in the right place, nourished and watered, biodiverse, growing well. A place of sanctuary for the community, bearing fruit for us, for others, for God's glory and the world's salvation.